Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today, or exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. Many people will have grabbed the popcorn and settled in this week to watch Boris Johnson being quizzed, some might say grilled, by the Privileges Committee about parties in Downing Street during the pandemic. And many of those will have heard what he had to say and made their own interpretations as to his guilt or otherwise. But what if there were other things that we could have paid attention to, which could reveal Johnson's mood, his mindset, or even whether or not he's guilty? To help me analyse the body language of Boris Johnson in particular, and a couple of other politicians in the news this week, I am thrilled to welcome body language expert Judy James. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Lucy. Hi.
And as I say, I'm going to keep my body language to an absolute minimum during this conversation. We'll focus solely on the politicians. When you were watching I think it was 3 hours of coverage at the Privileges Committee, what was the key body language element for you from Boris?
I suppose for me, and I, you know, with a lot of these politicians, I've studied them, sounds a bit weird and sinister, but you know what I mean, for many years. So in a way, and particularly with Boris Johnson, I'm looking to see how they've decided to turn up. What persona is their chosen one of the day? And I think with Boris in particular, I think he's got a little attic wardrobe somewhere where he kind of looks through it to find out what Boris will I be today? Will I be buffoon Boris? Will I be contrite Boris, apologetic, naughty boy Boris? Let's have a laugh together, Boris. So the overall persona I found absolutely fascinating. I could have put a bet on what he was going to do. He did indignation and anger. And I call that the Bill Clinton gambit. I don't know if you remember. Bill Clinton, in the Monica Lewinsky days, he firstly, when he was accused, he came out fighting. And you must remember that. Was up. I did not have sexual relations with that
woman.
I'm the president, you know, I wouldn't do anything like that. And I think in a way that Boris had maybe used and lifted that gambit, even though it didn't work for Clinton, obviously, and decided to act. It was a bit like, you know, somebody had taken Superman after he'd finished saving the world and told him that his boots weren't the regulation colour. It's that kind of, you're picking on trivia, and we were busy helping to save the world. So that was the body language that I found fascinating. And I think it was probably, in a way, a given, because he's done the apologetic, he's done the hair shirt, he's done the fight, he's done the sort of let's make it all sound rather funny. So it was very much with him going to the attack first. And I think he attacked the committee quite a lot before he, in his first speech. And then we got this rather angry, but certainly very indignant version of Boris.
Yes, it was pretty tetchy, wasn't it? It was almost as if, as you say, he'd made a conscious decision to not hide that indignation. And I also thought, in a way, did you think his hair was neater?
We laugh at this, but his hair is like seaweed when you're trying to see what the weather's going to be. You can judge from the way that he does his hair, because it's so contrived. I mean, I love the way that people think that his hair is genuinely this wild mop, because as you know, I'm sure, before he goes out in public, you know, he will ruffle it up.
Mess it up. Yeah.
You know, if you took a balloon, you get to get the static. So that is very much one version of the Boris persona. But I've also seen him as he was yesterday, where he's had it cut, where it looks quite neat, quite smart.
Yeah.
And actually, what was interesting, did you see the screen that they were showing below him, where they were showing the moments in Prime Minister's Question? And you saw this wild hairdo, and then you've got this very sort of smart looking, well, I wouldn't go as far as smart, but smarter look. And that very much would be a conscious decision that I'm not doing buffoon Boris now. I'm not trying to make people laugh. I'm trying to look honest. I'm trying to look professional. So no, that would be very much part of sort of judging which way the wind's blowing with Boris.
Yeah. So that was a deliberate ploy. But as you've identified, his voice quite a lot of the time sounded very put out. So if he'd made a conscious decision to look neat, Boris, professional, in control across the detail, but the voice couldn't quite keep up with that and kept leaking out as being very tetchy. What else did we see? What did you notice in the actual body language, hand gestures, facial tics that were really giving away that it was a performance, that it was him trying to be something that he isn't?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Boris that it sounds awful, but that he's very much the performer. And so he's very comfortable being something maybe that he isn't. I've had so many people say to me, even leading politicians, what's Boris really like? Who's the real Boris? That's the sort of measure of the man that I don't think anybody really knows. I'm not sure that he knows
either. He knows either, yeah.
For me, the tetchiness and the annoyance was probably about 90% part of how he wanted to appear, rather than looking congruent. I mean, people were saying, oh, he lost his temper. No, he didn't, because when, as you know, if somebody gets into a real state of aggressive arousal when they're getting really losing their temper, there's a change in the tension of their body. You can hear the breathing change. You can see the blink rate increase. None of that happened. What we got, right, when he allegedly lost his temper, were these kind of fist things. He does this clunking fist thing. And so we got a lot more of the sort of big fists coming up on the desk, but that's part of his repertoire anyway. So for me, he wasn't genuinely losing his temper. It was a kind of, that's the side of me I want to present. I picked three moments. The one that I found fascinating, in fact, both of these have been picked up really as the biggest moments. One was, I'm checking my script here because I like to get the words right. Hand on my heart, I did not lie to the house. Now, that's not a normal way of speaking to people anyway. You know, I mean, if I said to you, hand on my heart, Lucy, I watched the whole thing, you probably think I didn't. Because,
yes.
You know, did you do the washing up? Hand on my heart, I've done the washing up. It's an overkill ritual, but you could tell from the way that he kind of built up to it. He was moving his papers around. That was obviously his big sentence that he'd been rehearsing. What I found interesting with that was, and I don't know if you noticed, now I did a flat hand on the heart, because that if you're going to do an overkill like that, that tends to feel more genuine.
Right.
Kind of punched his fist quickly against his chest. Now, I don't see that as a I'm being honest gesture. That's more of an alpha chest beating movement. And in a way, that was his big moment. So it was almost a, this is going to make me look good. And also, body language is not a precise science, so I don't tend to pick on one thing and say it means this. But when he said that line, which was his big line, he did a cut off with his eyes. He looked down at that moment. So I don't think he felt like, he probably felt that was a bit of an overkill signal anyway. So that line didn't really work for me.
Wow. But as you say, he had an audience out there. And in fact, my contention is that he actually had two audiences. He had the committee that he was speaking in front of there and then, but at the same time, he was also hoping to speak to or communicate to those MPs who are going to get a free vote on whether Boris needs to be sanctioned at some point. So what you're saying is, consciously or unconsciously, he was drawing on that alpha maleness, almost as if to remind them, do you know who you are going to be trying to sanction here? It's me. It's big Boris here. Did that create a con? Did the two audiences create a conflict, do you think, that the in the room and out of the room?
I mean, for me, a good speaker and charisma is all about what I call the science of sensation. So it's how you leave the people feeling after you've spoken. And I feel that in a way, he was, a lot of what he did was trying to make the committee feel that they were very low down the pecking order, you know, that they, that that they weren't, perhaps, you know, they shouldn't be doing it, that there was a certain bias there, that they weren't at his level. I felt that he was still pitching to the public as well. I think he is very desperately, and I think in a way the public wanted as well. People voted for him, like masses of people voted for him. People that had never voted Tory before voted for him. And I think what they want to do, the science of sensation, is to still feel that they made the right choice, that they weren't idiots when they did that. So in a way, by venting this indignance, this anger, it's almost like saving people's own image as well, because you think, no, he's not down and out, he's not being overly contrite, he's fighting back. So yeah. I can pin my dignity on that a little bit as well. So I'd actually stretch it to the that he was pitching to the voters as well, to the public, to the red wards, the people that, you know, really want to save face, that want to be able to go into the pub on a Saturday night and say, yeah, I voted for Boris in the last election and I wasn't stupid. There's still something there that we can get behind. So I think some of that was pitching there as well.
Yes, there's still something very magnetic about it. And yeah, you don't lose your faith in me because I'm still the old Boris that you voted for, even though these people in the committee, they're trying to do me down. And I thought that also in the choice of some of his narrative. You know, politics is very much about the stories that we tell ourselves and each other about what's happening in our lives or what's happening in the narratives of politics. And Boris's vision of himself, in quite a lot of the answers that he gave, was, as you say, this hero. You know, I was responsible for the vaccine. I did all these great things. Don't forget, I had COVID. I came up off my deathbed, but also, with particular reference to the parties, you know, it was only me that could say thank you to all these people, even the person that I sacked, Lee Kane. One of the parties was for Lee Kane, who Boris had actually sacked. That he sees himself as this great thanker of all the staff for all their hard work. Did we see? You've mentioned the alpha maleness and the chest thump. Did we see other elements of Boris trying to convey to us his vision of himself in his body language?
I think in a way he didn't have the need to oversell that, because I think we've seen it anyway. I mean, that's how he got into to do Brexit. You know, it's very much he has very strong motivational abilities. You know, he can turn a situation around. We've seen speeches that he's made where we thought, oh, this isn't going to work, or and then suddenly he'll pull out a sort of real rabble-rousing speech and motivate people. So I think that's one of those skills that we know. And funnily enough, Lucy, one of the biggest things for me that I saw that in, that I think was shown, were the photographs that they were using, because, you know, you were taken back to the time of COVID, and then you've got this guy standing there in the doorway with his arms out, you know, and a drink in one hand. And you just think, just looking at that pose alone, that probably would have been exactly what you needed at the time. You know, it was positive. It was, we can get through this. We can win over this. And particularly if you've got staff that are tired. I mean, you know all this, you know, how many people say to you, you know, we just want good leadership, we want somebody that can actually make us feel better, motivate us, make us feel better. So I think the whole essence of Boris's charisma, and as I say, it was visible in the photographs, even if it wasn't totally visible in his performance, is the fact that he can literally walk into a room and without saying much, make people feel more upbeat and energised. I mean, not everybody, because obviously some people would rather throw tomatoes at him, but he seems to have that motivational ability. You know, it's like, oh, this is really quite a funny, you know, he will make you laugh. He does what I call the virtual wink. You know, he's very good at almost a nudge and a wink. Oh, come on, it's not that bad. You know, we can sort this out. And I think that can hit the psyche of the public when they're beleaguered in a very good place. And that's pretty much what he's based his success on, really.
Yes, my sense of Boris is that, and it's very hard to get this idea across, particularly to Boris critics who don't really want to hear it. But actually, we do know that Boris had quite a troubled childhood, not least with regard to how his parents interacted with each other. Mm-hmm. And that there is something very powerful about Boris's ability to empathize with people who are struggling, who do need motivating, who do need to have that sense of, come on, we can get through it. You don't want the gloomsters and the doomsters that as he would characterize them, that actually that's a side to Boris that a lot of people have connected with without even realizing they've connected with it.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. The other side as well is this kind of, I'm not going to call him a liar because obviously, but this thing about when people are talking about, does he look honest, does he look truthful? He's able to trigger this very pseudo-infantile performance side that almost brings out unconditional love from the audience. Because, you know, parents, children, would you rather have a child that can sit there and slickly tell you a lie and try and persuade you? Or would you rather have the naughty kid that you know has been naughty but has got a sort of cheeky grin on their face and colludes with you? Oh, well, you know, I didn't do it. You know, I did, but, you know, it doesn't matter. And I think he's got that cheeky, he doesn't, whether he's lying or not, he doesn't make you feel as though you're stupid for falling for it, because it's all a bit of a shared joke between you and him. When you get these very slick politicians that, I mean, there's some politicians where I look at them and I think, I have no idea what's going on behind that slickness. And I always say, for an animal, the most frightening other animal to me is not the one that's maybe showing their emotions, or it's the one that is pretending to be very, very friendly at first sight, because then that animal will actually be frightened that it wants to kill them. The mask is so sick that, why are they doing that? Do they mean danger for me? So, yeah, there's something about that childlike side of Boris as well that does make people offer unconditional love. Whatever he's done, it was cake, you know? He was ambushed by cake.
And it was my birthday and nobody sang happy birthday. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing for a grown man to say, but actually, that it's that little boy lost element. And I agree with you. I often felt that he looked like a little boy who has admittedly, as you say, been used to getting away with things, but maybe not this time. And there were moments when his hands were beneath the table and therefore his shoulders were slightly rounded in. And I felt he looked really small, because he's actually quite a big presence, both physically and obviously energetically. But actually there were moments where I thought he looked and maybe felt incredibly small and isolated.
I mean, that self-diminishing, which sadly you tend to see women do more than men. I hate to pick out the sexes, but in business, the amount of times that you'll see a woman sitting at a meeting self-diminishing in some way or another, and the guys under pressure will tend to splay out. But we did see Boris doing that yesterday. He also did a very, at the very start, he looked, he's hunched posture. Now, often he'll go into hedgehog mode when he's under pressure, which he'll kind of hunch up so he makes less of a target. But he was more like an angry turtle yesterday, because he was hunched over, but his neck was sticking out and he was doing head baton gestures everywhere. I found that really hilarious, actually. But
And what's a head baton gesture, just so that people can visualise it?
Head baton is when somebody, as they speak, will keep hitting their head forward as an emphatic gesture. A finger baton would be somebody beating time with their words with their finger, but a lot of politicians do it with the head baton, and that's what he was doing. It's very authoritative.
And talking of the genders there, we had Harriet Harman, who was leading the committee. Did you notice anything about her body language, or maybe any of the other members of the committee that were worth noting?
I thought she very much looked the part. She looked very confident. I'm going to pick up on something that I know people might say it's trivia, but the power chains that women are wearing when they get, I mean, her chain around her neck, she looked like Marley's ghost in Scrooge. The size of the chain, so wonder she could drag herself in. It was something that a lot of female politicians tend to do. Now, I don't mind it as a fashion statement, but what I find that people really do, and Boris had a similar problem. Boris's tie at one point went to sort of 8 o'clock on his body. Now, the whole thing is, and I know it sounds funny, but psychologically, the eye will always focus on chaos. So a crooked tie or a huge chain, you're not listening to Harriet. You're thinking, how can she even stand up with that thing around her neck?
Weighing around her neck, yeah.
Very, very long meeting. And I even started looking at that awful carpet wall art in the background. So the point I'm making is that it's good to make a statement, but don't detract. And I think in a way she undersold herself with that. I think I found myself during the boring bits looking at the necklace rather than looking at her. And I think maybe something a bit plainer. I think her body language was good. I think she was the only one that did have good body language. I think the others, you know, it's a bit like somebody that's been waiting in the wings to get on stage and do a big role in a play, and they've finally got the chance to do it. They were overly milking it. I mean, I really got annoyed. They're windbaggy questions. If you're going to pin Boris down, Boris is never good on detail. So ask him direct questions, ask him questions that need a direct detailed answer and make your question concise. But they were just pouring out the words at him. And of course, that A, gave him time to think, and B, he replied in kind. So it was windbag versus windbag. Who's the guy, Lucy, the guy on the right as we were looking at the screen? I've got his name down here somewhere. He was doing a very bad impression of Columbo. Do you remember the detective, Columbo?
Yes. What a sort of the follow-up Hawkins. Question is very, very much the killer question, do you mean?
Charles Walker was doing this Columbo sort of holding his forehead and putting it, oh, just, and
yeah.
He was a bit confused himself. And I thought, no, just, you don't need performances from the committee. You just need, you know, the public out there, and I've listened to everybody on the radio, whatever. So many people are so upset by what happened, and they just want somebody to keep asking Boris very straightforward questions, concise. So I think they showboated a little too much. Mm-hmm. But Harriet was good; she didn't. But the other ones, I wasn't particularly. I didn't think their techniques were the best techniques if you did want to get the facts out of Boris.
But for future reference, Harriet, you can ditch the necklace because you're strong enough already. Is what you would say.
That's pretty much my point. I mean, you know, it would be like one of the guys wearing a massively loud big tie. You don't need it. Just keep it. Don't try and distract or detract from you. We want to be looking at you and keep our eyes on you.
Well, I've got you because I'm loving what you have to say so much. There have obviously been a couple of other big stories in the news this week, and I think what I'd love to know is a tiny bit from you about President Xi and his trip to Moscow to see Vladimir Putin. I was wondering if you'd had time to see any of the coverage of that, and whether there was anything in particular you thought was quite interesting with these two world leaders meeting.
I mean I watch Putin's speeches, I analyse everything. And honestly, Lucy, I come away from them, particularly recently. It's a bit as though I've been watching a horror movie in terms of body language, because he's the ultimate player. He's the ultimate body language manipulator. And we saw that with President Xi. I mean, he gets his point across. I know politicians use the phrase the soundbite, but there's also the sight bite, which is where you do the one pose that goes around the world and it says everything that you want it to say. He did it years ago. I think he had his first meeting or a second one with Trump. Trump didn't want to look as though he was too friendly with Putin. He kept quite cold. He was trying to look superior. Putin sort of played along with that, and the two of them looked distanced. Just as the cameras were going off, And Trump had managed to sort of look like the alpha, Putin dashed across and grabbed his hand and started whispering and laughing in his ear as though they were really close allies behind the scenes. He completely stuffed Trump. So you could see him doing something very similar one handshake in particular, the one of the big handshakes they did, Putin had got his hand so tight, his fingers were going up the Chinese leader's sleeve. And he did that thing where they used eye contact to make it look very meaningful as a handshake. But then Putin placed his other hand on top as though to say, yeah, yeah, you know, we're real allies now. So he was very much selling that. And the other, I don't know if you saw the shot that they did with glasses of it looked like champagne. They've got these flutes.
Yeah.
And again, now, when do we drink champagne? When we're celebrating, you know, when something's, when we're partying with somebody, when we've had an agreement over something. So it looked like a victory after a sort of a really good meeting. And then, of course, we've got the eye contact going on over the glasses as well, which made it look even more meaningful. So all of those signals of very close collusion being sent out to the rest of the world. So I found that quite frightening in a lot of ways.
Yeah, their sort of alliance was being strengthened, or certainly, as you say, from a sight bite point of view, that's what we were meant to take away from that.
Absolutely. I mean, it was mainly coming from Putin, but I mean, that's what he's very good at. I was quite happy to get back to Gwyneth Paltrow analysing her in the headshot.
Well, we can save that for another podcast. I've just got a couple more questions. One, I guess, is about the leaders here, really. And Rishi Sunak has obviously not been in office for very long. Maybe he's had to grow into the role. We get to see him and Keir Starmer jousting, if you like, every week at Prime Minister's Questions. Is there anything in particular you've noticed about them? Has their body language shifted as they've had to get used to working with each other?
I hope people do watch PMQs, because I don't know, maybe I always think it's just the kind of, you know, for me, that's the perfect hobby sit down watch, because it does show an aspect of Rishi Sunak that we're not seeing otherwise. Rishi Sunak otherwise tends to sell himself as a Tony Blair tribute act when it comes to his body language. Most of his gesticulation, his desire for you to like him, almost the mock Cockney accent, all of that lovability, body language. He even does the sum of power that was Tony Blair's. And I find all of that very, for me, it's nauseating. I didn't like it when Blair did it, and I don't like him copying him. I've got this thing with politicians. Don't try and be somebody else. Don't be a tribute act. Bring out, whether it's good or bad, bring out your own qualities, your own charisma. But PMQ, he's very, very good. And you do see another side of him. He's very good at in the arguments. He can make points. He can literally sort of devastate his opponents. And I like that side of him, because he seems a lot more assured. He seems like a bigger leader. He seems like he's got real leadership. And you see him on the videos he puts on social media, and you've got the kind of, I don't know, prep school teach, hi everybody, you know, it's Rishi, and you know, you're back to that other version. Maybe people like that. I don't see Starmer changing, and that's interesting, because Starmer, his delivery, his body language hasn't really changed from Boris to Rishi, which is quite strange, because you've got two completely different opponents there. With him, I'm seeing almost exactly the same thing. He did do a speech yesterday, and I noticed he was wearing glasses for it. We got very much more of the pointing finger. He obviously, I don't know if somebody says that you're boring as a politician, he might have thought that a stabbing finger will make him look more interesting. It was almost as though Rishi moved straight into Boris's seat and then just carried on pummeling Starmer. And Starmer doesn't seem to have the kind of flexibility to cope with that. He needs to be more of a shapeshifter. And I don't mean sell out or anything like that, but he needs to look.
Needs to be a bit more nimble, a bit more agile in how he responds to whatever he's given.
And again, if I was coaching him, I'd probably advise him to do what Thatcher was advised to do. Bring the vocal tone down a little bit, because it goes into a bit of a whine too often. He always sounds a bit to me, was it Brenda from Barnsley? Who was that woman that actually, oh no, not another election, you know. It's
Brenda from Bristol. Oh no, not another one.
Another one. He tends to use that tone, you know, you're doing this and you're doing that. And in a way, vocally, he needs to bring his voice down in a stab rather than the pointing finger, you know, more of an angry growl and a pummeling verbally, I think. So rather than that, oh, this isn't right, this is wrong, you know, what we do. So I would get the vocal tone sorted out. He doesn't need to go overboard with his body language, but no, you're absolutely right. That, I suppose, because of his job previously, he didn't need to, but I think for politics, you
yes,
do need...
Yes, I do. I would argue that that's actually when you need it most, as if you're a barrister, you kind of need to respond to what, you know, the witness is giving you. You can't just assume that they're going to be in the way that you've prepared. I would hope.
Oh,
I
thought he was mainly defending people, wasn't he? Oh,
that's
no.
True, actually. But he would have cross-examined people. And yeah, I think there's a little bit of fleetness of foot that he might need to acquire over the next, let's say, 18 months. But you talk about that if you were coaching Starmer. So I'm going to finish with this one to go back to Boris. A lot has been made of the fact that Boris had been prepping very hard with his legal team. And of course, he was surrounded by, I think it was three advisors who were probably all sitting on their hands wondering where all of their good advice had gone. But if you had been advising Boris for yesterday's appearance in front of the committee, what would you have been focusing on? What would you have been trying to get him to do or not do?
I would definitely have got that gambit going, because I do think there's still wriggle room there, that we were busy saving the world. It was chaotic at the time. Do you not remember what it was like during the pandemic? Maybe even leak out a little bit of honesty, which is probably they didn't know what they were doing for a lot of the time. And I know politicians don't like to tell anybody that, but there must have been a little bit of making it up as you go along and being scared as well. But taking everybody back to that time. But the main thing, and you've touched on it, Lucy, I would have absolutely said to him, get rid of that legal team behind him, because their body language was giving away all sorts of horrors. I mean, the guy next to him was, when you could tell when Boris has said the wrong thing, because
yeah, he would wince.
Absolutely awful, fiddling with his pen. You could see them like meerkats. There was a guy, I think, to Boris's right shoulder, who had a sickly grin on his face most of the time, and you could see that that grin turned into a rictus when Boris was going down the wrong path. So they were giving away things that Boris wasn't. So that was a very... And they weren't allowed to talk to him, I don't think. So,
well, that was the funny thing. A lot was made of the fact that they weren't meant to be talking to him, that they could perhaps scribble notes. But actually, don't you think what would have been more powerful psychologically is if Boris had just gone on there on his own and had that sense of, it's just me. I'm just going to give you it straight, hand on heart, whether that was the right line or not, but it's just me, because it always has
you're
been.
Absolutely right. You don't, I mean, he didn't even know which chair to sit in, had somebody sitting there next to him, right? As you say, he couldn't consult with them, but to see him sitting there isolated would either have made people feel a little bit more sympathy towards him, or he would have looked like the only leader, you know, the Superman that he thinks that took everybody through the pandemic, the buck stops here. I think that would have sent out some very good messages. So yeah, clear the seats behind you next time, Boris.
Yeah, let's hope there isn't a next time. Judy James, body language expert extraordinaire, thank you very much for being on my couch today.
Thank you so much, Lucy.